The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
President Biden's infrastructure proposal includes billions to improving cybersecurity. It's an area of intensified interest after that ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline.
Close to $1 trillion was wiped off the total market value of Bitcoin and the like in Wednesday's market plunge. They were hit after China banned its banks from handling virtual money.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
U.S. President Joe Biden took his electric vehicle plan to the test track in Michigan on Tuesday, where he hit the accelerator of Ford's new electric F-150 Lightning truck during a visit where he touted a plan to invest in American electric automakers.
Consumers are in great shape. They are feeling better about spending their discretionary income, which bodes well going into the second quarter.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's Financial Sense News Hour. Coming up on deck, we're going to speak with Frank Barbera, Senior Portfolio Manager here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, to get a technical update on the stock market, commodities, and the inflation trade, which he says is losing a bit of momentum. So you're going to want to hear what he has to say. Then after that, we're going to air a trimmed down version of an interview we conducted last month on our FS Insider podcast with Dr. Alan Bollier at ITR Economics, where he discusses how they believe the good times are going to continue for most of this decade before a big call that they're making, and that is for a global depression in the 2030 timeframe. So we're going to discuss how to prepare for that, why they believe this is likely to come, and much, much more. So stay tuned for all that in this week's show. But first, here's Frank Barbera to tell us what moved the markets this week.
U.S. manufacturing activity continued to gather speed in May amid strong domestic demand and long backlogs of uncompleted work. Within the manufacturing sector, backlogs continue to increase as manufacturers struggle to find new raw materials and labor, both of which right now are in tight supply and are contributing to higher costs for both businesses and consumers. The IHS Market Manufacturing PMI rose to 61.5 in May, following a reading of 60.50 in April, and that was the highest reading since October 2009. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast index dipping to 60.2 in early May, so this was a positive surprise. Elsewhere, over in the labor market, we learned that the employment situation continues to improve as first-time initial jobless claims continue to decline, sliding back down toward pre-COVID pandemic crisis levels. On Thursday, initial jobless claims fell to 444,000, and that was the lowest reading since the pandemic began. At the same time, Republican governors in nearly half of all U.S. states have announced plans to end beefed-up federal unemployment benefits, which they say have disincentivized workers to re-enter the workforce. The shift away from the $300 per week payment started earlier this month, with Montana, South Carolina, and Indiana. And now Oklahoma and Texas have also ended their expanded unemployment benefits. On a related note, on Wednesday of this week, the Federal Reserve released its minutes for the April meeting. In the latest Fed minutes, the major subjects of discussion were both employment and inflation and the potential timing of any Fed tapering. Within the minutes, we learned that the Fed plans to continue its easy money policy as it still sees the economy as recovering from the COVID pandemic. However, the Fed will be watchful as evidence builds of a robust economic recovery and of mounting inflation. Several Fed officials said this week that the central bank is closely watching economic developments and will be ready to adjust policy when necessary. The minutes noted that some Fed officials want to begin discussing a plan for reducing the Fed's massive bond buying program at a future meeting. Atlanta President Ralph Bostic echoed remarks from other Fed officials, indicating that the central bank could begin looking at adjusting monetary policy, while St. Louis Fed President James Bullard stated, "If we get to the point where we're comfortable on the public health side, that the pandemic was largely behind us and was not going to resurge in some way, then I think we could talk about adjusting monetary policy. I don't think we're quite to that point yet, but it does seem like we're getting close." Elsewhere, after mixed signals in March, the U.S. housing market continued to power ahead in what some brokers are calling a real estate frenzy, as prices continue to rise and the length of time needed to sell a home continues to shrink. It ebbed from 4 months a year ago to just 2.4 months this May. Sales declined in April for the third straight month, down 2.7% month over month, slowing to the lowest levels since June 2020, which, according to Lawrence Yoon, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, was largely due to a lack of homes on the market. Quote, "Even with home sales declining modestly, one can describe the market as being red hot," said Mr. Yoon. Yet another area where supplies are tight is the red hot semiconductor industry, where semiconductor lead times, the time it takes for a company to order a chip and take delivery, increased to 17 weeks in April. Industry experts note that the shortages of these critical components are intensifying, that according to Susquehanna Financial Group, the current lead time of 17 weeks just surpassed the prior all-time high seen in 2018. And finally, according to Reuters, Boeing is preparing to increase the output of its 737 MAX jets to as many as 42 per month, beginning in the fall of 2022. This was good news, as it suggests that Boeing could be entering a recovery phase after its MAX planes were grounded for more than 20 months, starting back in March of 2019. And that's a look at some of the major headlines from the week just passed.
Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow at financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Stocks traded flat this week, but we did see a bit of a correction on Tuesday, and we are seeing some weakening in the inflation trade, particularly when we think about commodities and base metals. Joining us on the show today to discuss this and more is our senior portfolio manager at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Frank Barbera. Frank, let's start off talking about the stock market. What are you seeing there? What's your technical outlook currently?
Right now, the stock market is really trading in a sideways range. That's not too surprising, given the fact that we've seen a lot of liquidity coming from the Fed earlier this year, and it pushed equity prices up quite a bit. And so the market is taking what looks like a very healthy breather at the moment. We've seen tech-heavy, the NASDAQ, pulling back the most. And more recently, some of the weakness in tech has been offset by strength in financials and other sectors, materials. So there's been something of a rotation taking place within the stock market, and that's helped the averages remain fairly buoyant. So I would say right now, when you look at the S&P, we're around 4162. The highs in the S&P have been around 4220. and the support is really around 4,050. We tested that support twice on May 12th and May 19th, and we're sort of just right smack in the middle of that range. So far, that looks like a consolidation, but you always have to keep an eye on things. If prices do weaken and they were to move below 4,050, then you would have that picture could change, and it would look like, you know, maybe the consolidation was turning into some kind of a short-term, medium-term top. But it's too soon to tell that just yet.
Any areas that you're keeping on your radar for another major move?
First of all, I will say that where the NASDAQ is concerned, the recent sell-off has pushed a number of NASDAQ ETFs and indices down to short-term oversold readings. I keep a list of about 40 NASDAQ leaders, which I call the creatures of confidence, because they're some of the favorite hot ticket names that have been leading the NASDAQ for the last 2 or 3 years. And that just recently clocked in with a 9-day RSI under 30. And usually whenever the relative strength index gets down under 30, that means the market's short-term oversold. And we started to see the NASDAQ pick up. The QQQ index, which is trading around 324. That's the ETF that tracks the NASDAQ 100. That had some recent lows right around 314. And it's been sitting in a range between 310 and 340. Right now, it looks like it's really attempting to hold that support. And 310 becomes a very important level for the NASDAQ, the QQQ ETF, just like 4,050 is for the S&P 500. So I would say right now, a lot of the NASDAQ stocks look somewhat washed out, and they're trying to hold support. But there are some key levels below the market that need to be watched very carefully. Small cap stocks are also holding up in a range. I like to watch the IWR Russell 2000 ETF. That's at about 77 right now, and the key support there is around 75. The small caps have been moving sideways in a range for a while. You have to watch that because the move in the small caps that we saw was one for, you know, really a once a decade type move that we've just seen. And sometimes the small caps, yeah, they can top a little faster and roll over quicker. So I think that's one area to watch just in case if this market decides to start getting into trouble. I would look for the small caps to be sort of a canary in the coal mine. Another way of looking at the market is to divide the market into two quadrants. You can look at it as the reopening stocks, which will be companies that have benefited from the reopening of the economy. That would include areas like retailing, consumer discretionary, companies like Disney, you know, Carnival Cruise Lines. A lot of deep cyclical stocks. Those stocks have had a huge run over the last 4 to 5 months. And at the same time, stay-at-home stocks, which are companies that benefit from the work-from-home trend that did so well last year when the pandemic was at its full strength, those stocks have come way down. In many cases, they're deeply oversold. So there's some interesting rotation taking place within the stock market, and there are corners of the market that are very overbought and corners of the market that are very oversold. The REITs, some of the REIT real estate investment trusts are also starting to show up on my screens as oversold and somewhat depressed. And so that may be another area that to keep an eye on for a rotation. I also like healthcare quite a bit. I see a lot of value in healthcare and a lot of reasonable growth at the same time.
So big picture, the stocks that were really outperforming after the COVID hit, that was mostly the tech-heavy areas. Those were seeing dramatic performance all the way up until perhaps earlier this year. They've seen in some cases, especially the really high growth tech names, have seen a 30 to 50% haircut from their highs. So washed out there, but we're still seeing that rotation into the cyclical sectors, deep cyclical areas, like you said, materials, industrials, and other sectors that benefit from reopening. Let's talk about the inflation trade, because this has been a very big theme that we've been discussing going all the way back to April 2020, when we started saying, hey, get ready for higher inflation with all the stimulus that's been being printed and injected directly into consumer wallets. We've now seen that. It sounds like we're seeing a bit of some profit-taking and weakness now, or at least a loss in momentum, as you recently explained in one of the weekly investment videos, in the inflation trade. Do you mind giving us an update on that area?
That's right. And that really bears very close watching. And this is not, by the way, just a U.S. phenomenon. This is happening everywhere. There was a big article this week on Europe and Germany and France and how their PMIs, their forward-looking price indices, are in some cases have moved to all-time highs over the last few weeks, you know, data that goes back to inception. Now, some of their data maybe doesn't go back, you know, as far as our data goes, but nevertheless, you're talking at, you know, 20-year highs in inflation. Certainly, we've seen a huge surge here domestically, and there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, the supply chain issues with the ports, there were just shortages of a lot of different types of goods. And so we've seen price pressure there. We saw huge parabolic moves in things like lumber. We've seen copper very strong, but very slowly, you're beginning to see some of that ease off and prices are coming down. Lumber has it made a V-shaped top, and it seems to be moving almost into a liquidation cycle. It's been down 7 or 8 days in a row very strongly. It's down more than 20% from its highs. We've seen copper just easing off the highs a few percentage points. Within the base metals sector, this week, zinc prices are still holding up, and so are lead prices. But nickel has started to show some material weakness. Aluminum prices are down almost 8% over the last 7 days. Copper prices are about 5.5 to 6% off their recent high. And what is also catching my eye is real weakness in the precious metals, in the white precious metals, platinum and palladium. And they're a little bit different. Platinum and palladium are definitely keyed to the industrial sector. And so this is reflective of possibly somewhat the delays in semiconductor chips that are affecting the auto industry and slowing autos, you know, basically what could be a supply-induced bottleneck in that industry. So you're seeing platinum down 6% just this week, down $78 an ounce. That's also down about 12.5% from its high on February 16th. Palladium on Friday dropped very sharply. It was down $71 an ounce. That's down almost 8% again off the high. So we're seeing some metal prices really beginning to come off the highs in a material sense. And that has me at least wondering out loud, you know, is the inflation, may it actually be transitory, at least in some portion of it, in terms of what we're seeing with some of these spot commodity prices. I'm sure that core inflation will be moving up for months on end, and I think that remains a problem for the Fed. But if we start seeing more commodity weakness, we also saw oil prices coming down this week, that might start to dampen off headline inflation, and that could create something more of a rotation within the equity markets.
Now, Frank, from analysis that we've been doing on our podcast and elsewhere, it seems that the really high rates of inflation that we've been seeing in the data that came out just in recent weeks, that will likely be transitory in terms of the rates of growth. But we should expect inflation to come back down to a higher than average reading once we do settle down to something that, you know, reflects a little bit more normalcy with the supply chains and some of those other factors getting worked out. Would you agree with that in terms of high rates temporarily, but a higher than average permanently looking out multiple years?
Chris, I guess I'm not sure. I think that it may be very volatile. Sometimes what happens, a classic late cycle move, which I'm not sure we're in. So this is one of those things where we are definitely sort of feeling our way along. But in the past, at least, let's say, for example, if you go back to 1987, you had surging inflation. Inflation was running very, very hot, just like it is right now. You had like this category 5 hurricane in inflation. The price of gold, the price of silver, all kinds of commodities were surging very strongly. It became the hot topic du jour. Bond yields were backing up aggressively. And at some point, that whole thing put pressure on the stock market, and the stock market then plunged. And because the Fed had to tighten. And so in this situation, it's sort of really tap dancing on the edge of a volcano, because you have an unusual, very unusual set of circumstances. The Fed has almost never had language that's this easy, and when inflation has been running this hot. So there's a very sharp contrast right there. And at this week's minutes, some of the Fed governors were saying, you know, they'd like to, you know, maybe at least begin the conversation about tapering. And I think they're trying to break this to the markets very gently so that it dampens volatility. And to give them their full credit, so far they've been extremely successful with that. The problem is there's a lot of leverage in the system. And a lot of leverage seems to be somewhat unwinding at the periphery. If you look at things like Bitcoin this week, where you really had a big speculative wave, that seems to be starting to come out. The air seems to be starting to come out on that. You're starting to see some peripheral pressure. Gold and silver were strong. But for example, silver is really an enigma. And I think maybe another canary in the coal mine to watch, because in the past, silver has always been like the best performing asset during strong inflation cycles. And this time, over the last few months, as inflation has been steadily ramping up, we saw gold under steady pressure moving down and silver holding up. So on a relative basis, silver was strong relative to gold over the last 4 to 5 months. But now that inflation is really surging, silver is not moving up. And I find that to be fascinating. I find it fascinating that silver stocks, there are a few of the really high quality names have done, you know, pretty well. But when you look across the group, the volume going into silver stocks has been, you know, pretty minimal. And most of the group has not been responding. So silver stocks and the price of silver itself have really not broken out. And that has me at least wondering whether silver is sniffing out some kind of a turn here and a peak in headline inflation, in which case, you know, the rotation may be more towards risk off assets. And while I know it sounds, you know, lunatic right now, the bond market might actually be trying to find some kind of a low. I would label that as very early. And I certainly would not be, you know, putting on duration in bonds, but it's starting to get a little bit more interesting in terms of the price action in bonds and what looks like some heaviness in the materials space and extended charts on some of the inflation hedges.
Frank, over the past year or more, as we expected inflationary pressures to pick up, we have both pared back on our bond portfolios, decreasing duration, that is going shorter term, and also moving into inflation protected bonds, as well as increasing our exposure to the commodity sector. That has been a very good call. As we know, we've seen a big surge in commodities, a big surge in inflation over that time period. However, given some of the uncertainties that you just mentioned, as senior portfolio manager for Financial Sense Wealth Management, how are you investing around some of these things with clients from a risk management standpoint?
What you have to do is you have to watch it very closely and you try to let the market tell you. And that's what we're looking for, are a lot of cues coming from various different corners of the market to help us, you know, inform us and make an intelligent judgment. Usually you see markets starting to reverse, breaking key moving averages. There's usually momentum divergences, breadth deteriorates. There's always excess sentiment. There's always a myriad of different signals that if you're looking and paying close attention and just trying to read those signals, that is the best way. When I was young, a lot younger, I had a part of my career where I was very interested in Elliott wave analysis. In fact, I had actually spent some time talking to Bob Prechter down in Gainesville, Georgia, but I was working with John Bollinger. And John Bollinger just did not like Elliott wave analysis. I mean, he wasn't wasn't negative about it, but he just said, he told me, he said, young man, he said, the stock market is not that complicated. He said, you just have to watch the trends and look for a turn. And he said, that's up to down. He said, when it starts to break down, it starts to break moving averages, let it tell you. And that's actually by far the best way of running money, because if you can use a trailing stop, which is something I believe in quite a bit. First of all, I like to do what Warren Buffett does, and I know Chris and Ryan do as well. And that is always you look for oversold. And when market something is out of favor and it's being discarded, you know, you look to buy straw hats in the fall. And so we run screens to see what's oversold, what's really not in fashion. And then you start to watch that. And if it starts to firm up and it starts to give buy signals, you can take a chance. You buy it and then you put a stop loss right underneath it. And if that asset starts to appreciate, you just follow it up with a trailing stop. And trailing stops are wonderful things because you can back test them. You can let the market have a certain amount of normalized volatility. You know, all markets need to breathe. They need to move around in a range. And you want to be able to give them a certain amount of normal flutter. And then there's a point where if they start to trend down and that's increasing directional movement, that tells us that at that point we want to be reacting with an actionable event. And so that's how I think that's from a philosophical point of view. That's how I like to handle markets, because ultimately the markets will tell you. You just have to be open-minded enough to listen.
So in sum, Frank, it sounds like we're seeing a bit of a cool off in the commodity sector and the broader inflationary trade. This is something that you've been showing in some of the charts in the weekly investment meetings that we post on our website and on YouTube. But at this point, given what we discussed today, we are still maintaining our exposure to these inflation hedges, but on watch for any key breakdowns that may warrant adjusting those positions across client portfolios.
Chris, I couldn't agree more. It's always about probabilities and risk management and about discipline. And right now, you know, when an asset class has had a large and a sustained advance, this market, for example, if you were looking up at the number of weeks it has been up over the last 2 years, just the number of positive weeks, that's in the upper, you know, 5% of history's readings. It tells us we've seen a pretty extended move up. That doesn't mean it can't keep going higher. But when you see those kinds of signals, you have to keep your eye on risk mitigation. Always know, where is your stop? Where will I react? And that's the way to make sure investors continue to grow their wealth and stay out of trouble.
Great calls that you've been making, Frank. And it's always a pleasure to speak with you on our podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. Have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful weekend to our entire audience.
Do you find yourself reacting to market news, selling when you should be buying, and buying when you should be selling? Are you making costly investment mistakes? It's time to take control and develop a plan that keeps your investments centered, no matter what direction the markets take. We can help you protect your investments during market downturns and profit when markets rise. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management to create an investment strategy today. Call 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
ITR Economics is an economic forecasting firm that provides regular updates and an economic analysis for businesses across the globe. They, along with our firm, Financial Sense Wealth Management, rely closely on leading economic and financial data that provide a forward-looking view of many trends that affect each sector of the global economy. We've been speaking with them on Financial Sense NewsHour for about 7 years to get regular updates on their outlook, including one of the biggest and most notable forecasts they are making, which is for the global economy to enter another depression in the years ahead. Keep in mind, this is simply based on a number of trends when it comes to demographics, debt, and inflation. We spoke with ITR's Dr. Alan Bollier on our weekday premium podcast, FS Insider, last month to get an update on their view, and are going to re-air a shortened version of that interview today to our public listeners, since if they are correct, this will impact every one of us in the years ahead. If you are not already a subscriber and would like to hear more of our interviews airing 3 days every week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button. Let's talk about the Great Depression call. When do you expect it to happen and why?
2030 is the answer to the question. And it's been that way since Brian and I did the research and wrote that book in 2014. And we have dusted all that off this past summer to make sure that the thinking process was still in place, that the math hadn't changed the timing. And it is still that 2030 timeframe. And we're not dogmatic. We're not so arrogant as to say it will be exactly 2030. It could wander a little based upon what government does or doesn't do, how the world shapes up. But things as they are, even as of yesterday, we're still on track for 2030 as being that time frame. And if I can take that question, Chris, and just change it a little bit, I want to talk about the lead up to that time period, because I think that helps us to understand the why. So rather than just jump to 2030, I want to talk about in the reasons. Let me do a little storytelling. The economy is doing well. People have money. The government has been very generous with their stimulus and with their spending. A lot of retail activity, a lot of B2B activity going on, a lot of positive momentum. We've all heard Jamie Dimon talk about, you know, great big GDP numbers and all kinds of positive things going on. And that's going to fuel the economy through this year and into 22. Although I will let you know, we think the rate of rise in global growth will slow in 22, not continue to heat up. But having said that, we kind of set the stage for a world that thinks, all right, glad that's over. Glad that's passed. And I think we're going to forget that we've adopted in this country and in many countries around the world, modern monetary theory, MMT, which you probably have also heard it called the magic money tree. And there are Nobel laureates who think it's fine. It doesn't matter. And I'm not here to diss them. We just think it matters that as we continue to borrow and borrow and borrow and create fiat currency and just put more currency out there and checks and programs and provide basic income levels and not worry where the money comes from, it becomes a really curious process of it's fine when interest rates are this low, but what happens when they go up? And one thing you and I know, Chris, is that they do always go up. Eventually, they go up. You could be Japan and have it be a decade, but they do go up. And we're going to find interest rates going up later this decade because of a slow build in inflation. As it comes into being, the Federal Reserve is bound to raise interest rates, probably not until 23, maybe a little bit late 22, but I suspect it'll be 23, and that's not going to be a lot. And so we're going to have a little inflation, a little interest rate rise, a little more inflation, a little more interest rate rise. There will be bumps in the road. There will be, you know, sectoral downturns along the way. But basically, we're all going to get used to a mild inflation, mildly rising interest rate world. And as that happens, jobs will be created. People will be making more money and life will seem pretty good. And all the while, we're not going to be looking at the debt. And all the while, we're not going to be looking at eventually inflation creates enough of a pain that the Fed must raise interest rates enough so that it becomes really difficult for corporate borrowers, and there's a lot of that debt, as you well know, and for individual borrowers, and I think we're going to overextend again, and we're going to find ourselves with, where did this come from, when in fact we've been creating it for a long time? And it'll be a surprise to many people because of that feeling that things are good. And you remember the past, I'm sure most of your listeners do, if you get a couple of years where things are rolling, you tend to straight line forecast and you tend to think, we got this figured out now. Things are good. We're all rolling along. How long will this last? Well, it's just going to keep lasting. And that's what allows people to run into walls. They start believing their own press. They start thinking it doesn't matter that you print money. It doesn't matter that you borrow like there's no tomorrow, until one day it does. And so you have interest rates, you have inflation causing interest rates and the pressures that come there. You have the borrowing going on, which is unsustainable as a percent of the U.S. budget sometime in the future. But the coup de grace, or maybe the silver stadium, but it's certainly a key component, is here in the United States and around the world, Chris, all of us baby boomers, I'm a boomer, I'm part of the problem. We're going to, in this country, jump from 40 million of us on Medicare and prescription drugs and Social Security to 80 million of us. And as we transition out of the economy, we're going to become this major drain on the economy. Somebody's going to have to pay for that. Now, if borrowing is tougher because interest rates are higher, that means that they either say, sorry, older generation, you're not going to get your money, or they go to the Gen Xers and they go to the millennials and they go to Gen Z and go, sorry, we have to tax you more. We have to take care of our senior citizens. So at the same time, when costs are going up, taxes going up, and that's not a good prescription for economic growth. And because of the extremes we think we're going to be at, it brings about a recession that will become a depression in the 2030s, at least for the first half of that decade. You can't get rid of the older folks, and you can't deny the benefits because, son of a gun, we're a very large cohort, and we vote. And we vote more than other cohorts. So you can't really turn against us because we'll turn against you at the polls. And especially if we can just mail it in, don't have to leave the nursing home. So what we're going to find, I think, is that we're setting a stage for an economic problem. Now, to your earlier point, what I just said, I said the word Great Depression. And a lot of people think, what is that going to look like? Well, picture the Great Depression, 1930s. Just, you got that picture in your mind? And I'll make it a color picture. Now you got it. There's going to be all kinds of unemployment. There's going to be business failures. There's going to be home prices going down. Stock market's going to collapse. You're going to find that it's going to be an economic reset, very painful for unprepared people. Now, your listeners are prepared. People who read the book are prepared. And as they prepare for it between now and then, that's part of what Brian and I are going to cover. How do you prepare for all that? What are the triggers you watch for so that you know as you get closer that it maybe moved from 2030 to 2028? Because there are certain triggers. And then how do you make money, protect your family, your business, and actually make money in a Great Depression? That's where the secret lies, because anytime there's a downdraft, there's money to be made and there are assets to be bought at really, really favorable prices. And that can set up your family and your legacy for a generation or more. Knowing is key. Preparing is even more important.
If you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit more about the upcoming presentation and how our listeners can follow more of ITR Economics' work.
Sure. You can follow more of our work by going to itreconomics.com. And there's lots of information on our website. We have a large, I think it's a robust digital presence where you can get good content for free. And then we have other content, deeper content that's subscription-based. But what we're going to be covering is in detail for the next 15 years, what's GDP growth going to look like? Inflation. We've talked in general terms about inflation and interest rates and wealth creation. We're going to get into a lot more detail about that. We're going to look at the global economic landscape through the 2030s. And that way, it's a view of where will be a good place for you to actually physically be or to invest in that time period. It is a global depression, but not all countries are going to feel it the same way. What are we going to see for the U.S. dollar through the near term and through the longer term? That's a lot of value to folks. And we're going to look at how you can enhance your profitability. We're going to look at whether you want to be in metals, different things like that. That's all going to be wrapped up in that 90 minutes. And then in the 90 minutes, Brian and I always leave a generous time for Q&A because we know what's on people's minds that we haven't talked about is equally as important as what we did talk about. So we leave plenty of room for that.
Dr. Alan Bollier, president of ITR Economics, co-author of Prosperity in an Age of Decline. It was a pleasure, as always, speaking with you, and we look forward to speaking with you on our show again. If you have any feedback on our show, go to financialsense.com and click the Contact Us button, or you can also email me at cris@financialsense.com. If you'd like to speak with any of our advisors about our investment services and how we may assist you, feel free to give us a call at 888-486-3939. You can also email us at grow@financialsense.com. On behalf of Financial Sense Wealth Management and the Financial Sense NewsHour team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.